Hello and welcome to the Raptors weekly podcast for the week of Monday, December the 25th. Merry Christmas, everyone out there. I'm your host, William Liu, joined on the program. It's becoming an annual tradition. Joe Cusciaro, what's up?
The Christmas tradition, man, just like your morning French press.
That's right.
The stuff of legend.
Those are the only two things. I mean, that and also basketball. This is honestly like...
Non-Raptors basketball.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about that?
I mean, I don't know. I'm not as triggered by it as most seem to be.
I was going
to
say, I kind of don't mind like not having to do Raptors stuff. Yeah. You know, like, because it's like one day of the year I can like casually watch basketball, yeah. Right? Like, it's the whole Christmas showcase. Like,
cheer against the Celtics, it's easy. Like,
yeah.
I mean, but if it was Raptors Celtics on Christmas.
Oh my God. Yeah. See, that's salt. Actually, recently I found out my little cousin is actually a Kyrie Irving fan, so she's now become a Boston Celtics fan.
Which broke my heart.
I tried telling her that Kyle Lowry, not Kyrie, but she wasn't having it.
She pulled a Fredo, man. She broke.
I know she did. She had to send her off on a boat. Spoiler alert!
Wow, this Christmas pod turned dark pretty quickly.
The Raptors are. Here's the thing, Cash. You said before the year 60 wins. Now I feel like every year I've known you, you've said Raptors 60 wins, but. This past year, you said 60 wins. I wasn't as high. I said 50. But right now, they're exactly on pace for 60. Cash, you looking good with the prediction?
Yeah, I mean, look, I was obviously being a little facetious when I said 60 wins.
Yeah.
I didn't actually think they could win 60 games. Now we're sitting here at Christmas. And
do
I'm
you
like,
think they can win 60 games now?
Can they? Yes. Okay. Now, will they? That's obviously, you can't answer that. But they're on that kind of a pace when you look at the remaining schedule left. And just the fact that... You know, this is from a regular season standpoint, this team is so damn consistent. They just seem to kind of take care of business. They got a whack load of home games, a lot of games against losing opponents. They don't have any long trips left, if any. So really, I mean, to me, it's a health thing. If they stay healthy, like relatively healthy, and just win the games they should win. Like, I'm not even saying they got to beat the Warriors or maybe take one of three against Cleveland, if not two. But, like, they don't got to beat the Warriors when they come into town or things like that. Just take care of the teams you're supposed to take care of from here on out. And they'll pretty much cruise to 55 wins. And then that's when it comes into play, where then if you, like, steal a game from the Warriors or you maybe win on the second night of a back-to-back when I'm counting that as an L, that's when all of a sudden, like, 60 actually comes into play, which, as much as I joked around about it, it actually is possible. Like, they're that good.
Yeah, I think 55 is probably more likely than 60, but it depends, man. Yeah. I mean, like right now they're rolling. Like right now they're just rolling.
Yes. Yeah.
They've had a spate of just like very easy games after a tough West Coast schedule, and you know to their credit they've taken care of all of those except for that Clippers game, which was one of the worst games they played, but still very winnable. They dropped that one obviously, but aside from that, they like all these low bottom teams like they've just taken care of them. Charlotte.
Yeah.
Kings, Brooklyn, Phoenix, Kings again, Memphis, Suns again, Indiana. Well, I guess Indiana's not even a really shitty team.
Yeah, they've been competitive. I mean, so, I think the one thing that'll obviously kind of get in the way of the 60 is right now, like you said, they're rolling.
Yeah.
And everything's kind of going well. And I feel like, especially when it's this long of a stretch, I think it's they won 13 of 14 now.
Right.
When a nice feel-good stretch rolls on that long, you almost forget what it's like to have a bit of adversity.
Right,
and, you know, I think people do forget that, you know, there's going to be at least one more time this season where, like, they lose back-to-back games that you don't even understand how they lost. Or
like the Knicks and Pacers game.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, like, another Clippers game is going to happen when it seems like it's in the bag and then, like, the night ends. You're like, wait, they lost?
Yeah.
There's always going to be those nights, and I think that's when, you know, a couple of those will creep up, and then we'll probably be reminded, like, okay, yeah, they're not winning 60 games.
Yeah. I mean, also in January, we got some tough games coming up.
Yeah.
We're playing Golden State and Cleveland back-to-back. Yeah. Drake will be here for that, hopefully. He's going to be there.
Yeah.
He's watching, like, Charlotte. Yeah.
It's a Thursday night and a Saturday night, I think.
Yeah. Which is, that's good, man. I think that's TNT, right?
The Thursday night is, yeah.
Yeah. That's good. It's good. See, Raptors are on national television, you know, when it's against the Cavs. and then, yeah, we're also playing the Spurs. So, but that's, like, three tough home games where, you know, I think there's just been this big, conversation about, like, are people taking the Raptors seriously and stuff. Obviously, you understand, like, where people are coming from in the sense that the Raptors have been disappointing in the last couple of years and when they're in playoffs in comparison to how they've done in the regular season. But you know, in order for the Raptors to start getting that hype, like, for real, like, they have to actually have some marquee wins, yes. right? And, like, they had some. Like, beating Houston early on in the yep. year was a marquee win. Like, right after we beat Houston, they won 14 straight.
Yeah.
Right? But, I mean, at the same time, like, the Raptors, they have sort of, you know, puffed up the schedule and, you know, made their record better by playing some, you know,
yeah.
lower-end teams, which is not their fault. You yeah. can only play who is ahead of you. But, you know, once you beat a team like Golden State, once you beat a team like Cleveland, or even the Spurs, yeah. like, that's where the national media will actually turn around and say, whoa, hold up, this is, like, a really different team. Like, can they really do something?
Yeah.
And I think that's the time. I mean, like, those are the three games I got circled for sure in January.
Yeah. And I think, too, like, you know, you mentioned the national TV thing. I think so much, like, I know you get kind of caught up in the fandom thing, but, like, you know, guys, like, there's not some grand conspiracy. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. no one's sitting at the league office, like, saying, we don't want the Raptors on Christmas Day because they play in, like, because
well, I mean, that, but it's part of it.
It's right? part of it because, like, from a, exactly, yeah. from, like, a TV and an advertising standpoint, you know? Like, they yeah. don't get, you know, if the highest ever Canadian audience watches a Raptors game on Christmas and it's like a million something watch on TSN or Sportsnet, whatever it is,
yeah.
that doesn't count in the States. You know, they're not getting those ratings and they can't yeah. use that to sell advertising and all that stuff. So there's actually like logistical reasons why having the Raptors on national TV isn't as beneficial as having, you know, some big market American team. It's not a conspiracy. It's just kind of the way it is. And I think people have to understand that too, that for the Raptors to be a draw on national TV, they basically gotta be like a legit championship contender.
Or they have to have fans.
Or exactly. Or they have to have like a truly transcendent star that people mm-hmm. want to tune into no matter what market he's in. You know, and it's the same thing. Like Philly hasn't been on Christmas. They're one of the biggest markets in the States, traditional NBA yeah. market. Haven't been on Christmas in 16 years. They're this up and coming team now that at least everyone sees it that way. They've got Embiid, they got Simmons, they're mm-hmm. back on Christmas. Not because the league thinks like they're a better team than the Raptors, or they deserve more respect. It's just mm-hmm. the league smartly assumes more people in the States are going to watch the Sixers and the Raptors.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I mean, going back to this week's games, or last week's games, the two wins over Philly were both legitimately yeah. impressive. Like,
yeah.
They got down big. They made, the, like, the a 22-point comeback
on the road? On the, like, yeah. and on the second night of a back-to-back?
And on the second night of a back-to-back. I wrote that one off. I mean, like, with Embiid out, it's like, all right, whatever. But, you know, that was an impressive win. And then the Raptors did it again. Like, coming home, facing a fully healthy Sixers. Well, I guess they didn't have, what, Redick?
JJ, yeah.
Who cares? We didn't have CJ Miles. It's, like, yeah. almost the same yeah. thing, right? CJ's, well, or Redick's a bit better, mm-hmm. but whatever. Not by a substantial amount. But they did have Embiid, and the Raptors held them to 86 points yeah. at home. Like, this is, again, it's just everyone, they're just taking care of business in all these games. Like, that's not a win for, like, for most teams, beating the Sixers. It's like a nice thing. It's yeah. like a nice win.
Beating right? them in two times in three nights is yeah. is very nice, you know? And outscoring them by like 40-something in the last six quarters they played them is pretty impressive, too.
Yeah.
But that's just, like, the Raptors are a legitimate buzzsaw at home. I mean, obviously they're a great They've team in general.
They've lost one time.
Yeah, they're a great team in general.
That was Kyle Lowry got ejected.
That was the Wizards game that, like, I know, you know, no one likes excuses, but that first game back after a long road trip is always a weird game.
Yeah.
And that game in general, yeah, it was like the Lowry ejection game. Fred Van Vliet almost won it on his own. Like,
yeah.
that game
yeah.
didn't make a lot of sense. And that's the only L at home this year. But, yeah, like, you looked at it, and I was saying it too. Like, when I first looked at the schedule and I saw the Sixers coming in on a Saturday night right before the holidays, I looked at it as like, man, that's going to be a really fun, exciting game. Like,
yeah.
great crowd probably right before the holidays.
And it was a good matchup and for, like, the first half.
It was, yeah. But it ended up not being exciting just strictly because the Raptors are almost, like, too dominant at home.
Yeah.
That until a team like Cleveland or Golden State comes in here, you're just going to see the Raptors pretty much wipe the floor with a lot of these lesser teams.
And that's a playoff team. I mean, the Sixers are in a bit of a rut right now. They've yeah. lost a couple, but, like, a lot of those were without yeah. Embiid.
And talent-wise, they're a playoff team, no doubt.
Yeah, exactly. They obviously, they're a young team. They got to get this. Like, for example, like, classic signs of a young team. Like, crazy turnover issues, right? Yeah. Without the turn, like, if they just had, like, just some respectable, just like if they valued possessions properly,
yeah.
they'd be a lot better. But I mean, like, that's again, that's not like a throwaway win. Like,
no,
it's an impressive win. So, obviously, a key during this whole entire stretch has been DeMar.
Yes,
can he shoot threes now? What is going on? He hit what, three threes against Philadelphia, in the last game,
and six
a career high six threes with what? Oh, he hit four threes against Philly at home, 6 on the road, and then he hit 3 of 4 against Charlotte the time
before that. So you're looking at 13 made threes in his last 3 games.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean,
what's going on?
No one really seems to know other than he works hard, right? Like, even
he's always worked hard.
Exactly. Right? But, you know, that's all Dwayne's saying right now is that, you know, he shoots them at night, he shoots them in the morning, he works hard, and that's what he's trying to add to his game. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe something finally clicked. Like, Zach Lowe mentioned, for example, that it's the most confident he's looked going up, which, I guess says something. But, like,
against the Sixers, like, it wasn't even, like, catch and shoot. It was, like, he would just have the ball in the corner. He's like, all right, I'll step back and shoot this, which is nuts.
That the least DeMar thing I've ever seen was during that comeback. He caught the ball a couple feet inside the three-point arc in the corner, stepped back Ray Allen style, and, let it fly and drained it. I don't know, whether something's clicked or not and he's actually just going to be, a competent three-point shooter, you know, who knows? But the fact that he's, more willing to take them and can at least make them here and there where, it keeps the defense honest. Maybe they'll start closing out a little harder on him and we already know how good he is attacking closeouts. Like, it can only translate to good things.
Yeah. I mean, he's at 34% right now, which is pretty impressive.
It's slightly below average.
Yeah. But, I mean, I would say, this is just yet another example of DeMar, improving. If you look at it this year, his offensive game, because there's more shooters around him, because he's passing it better, and maybe even because he's hitting the three more. It's not like teams are necessarily respecting it all the way, but, I mean, it's opened up everything. His scoring is a little bit down. He's down from, 28 to 25, but he's shooting a career-high 49% from the field, and it's over 50% on twos. It's he's one of the best, if not the best mid-range shooter in the league. He's hitting, 48%, which is, Dirk, Kobe, MJ was a freak. MJ was 55, which is just insane. But, in terms of mid-range shots, he's taking them and he's making them, right? Yeah. So, if you're going to criticize him for taking mid-range shots, he's making them. And then the passing has been great, 5 assists a game, that's the highest. In terms of assist percentage for shooting guards, that's, one of the best in the league. DeMar, I think the one thing that's being overlooked with DeMar is just, he's been willing to change his game.
Yes.
And that's allowed the entire team to change their game. Because, obviously, he runs so much of the offense. And that's something he should get credit for.
Absolutely. And it kind of goes hand in hand with Dwayne Casey, to be honest. Yeah. Because both of them, I think, deserve a lot of credit for that. Whether it's Dwayne Casey in his coaching tenure with the Raptors, always being willing to evolve. I know people get on him for rotations and this and that, but, considering Dwayne Casey is a 60-year-old man, and seriously, when you look at coaches in the NBA or in pro sports in general that have kind of those, old head coaches that have been around the block and have seen a lot of shit, guys like Casey don't evolve. They really don't. You can look at big-name coaches, crappy coaches, whatever. They do not usually evolve. It's very rare when you see the guys like Pop who are willing to actually adapt their philosophies and strategies based on the talent around them and based on the way the game is trending. Dwayne's been more than willing to do that over the years. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of similar to DeMar, right? DeMar's game has evolved every year. This year especially, it seems like it's evolving with the way the game is evolving, right? With a little more threes, a little more ball movement. And I think those two guys, I still think Kyle Lowry's the best overall player on the team, but I still think...
This year it's really close.
But it is. DeMar has definitely really closed that gap.
And the Raptors are, for the first time, pretty much since the two of them got together, the Raptors are actually doing better with DeMar on the floor than with Kyle.
Right.
Obviously, there's more context in that, and it's very close. It's I don't know what the official updated numbers are, but it's 6.7 to 6.4, last time I checked. That all speaks to DeRozan closing the gap.
Yes.
I guess that's the kind of
he really has.
Right? So.
And look, defensively, whether that's something he can actually develop over time.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say I don't care, but it means a lot less to me just because of what he does offensively. We're not talking about a guy who gives you 10 to 12 points a night and is kind of a catch and shoot guy where you need him to defend his position too. DeMar DeRozan's one of the, when you need him to be, can be one of the highest usage guys in the NBA. He can carry an offense.
Give you 45 points if you need to complete a 22-point
comeback. You saw what he did last year when Lowry went out, when he carried them through that stretch just by putting the offense on his back. If a guy's that good offensively, and DeRozan, if someone had told you at the beginning of the year, given DeMar's shot profile, he'd be at almost 49 from the field and 34% from three on multiple attempts a game.
Yeah, almost three.
With
good
playmaking, passing, legitimate playmaking
from
the two-guard position, you take that and run and you're laughing to the bank every day of the week and, whatever he gives you on defense is fine.
Yeah, and you know what? He's had some moments on defense. Yeah. It's not entirely bad. Obviously, he's not a good defender. He's not necessarily willing to defend, but, you know, in some cases this year, he's been all right. I think switching more often has helped because he's just terrible at run-going screens.
Yeah, having lineups that are
switchable.
Switchable 1-5 almost, it helps a lot.
Yeah, exactly. DeMar's getting a lot of credit. The Raptors getting a lot of credit. I mean, it's just good right now. To wrap up this first segment, we're going to preview the week's games. The Raptors take on the Dallas Mavericks on Tuesday. On Boxing Day in Dallas, the Mavericks are not a good team, but they've been around 500 since after a really, really slow start. But ultimately, they're still 9-25. That's a win.
Yeah, they should win that.
And we've kind of played Dallas well in the last
couple of years.
When was the last time we lost Dallas?
It's been a while. And even, like, you know, winning at Dallas is always tough. But I think it's been two or three years in a row now they've gone there and won. So
there you go.
I think it's the night after they're in OKC, right? Back-to-back, they're in OKC the next night?
Yes, they're in OKC the next night. OKC is, you know what, their record has been better, but they're not necessarily playing better.
Yeah.
Like, their point differential was, like, crazy positive, but they kept losing games. And now it's going the other way. Like, they're winning games, but they're, like, very unimpressive wins.
Yep.
But second night of a back-to-back, OKC is fifth in the West. Westbrook is playing better. I mean, really, Westbrook is just, like, taking more control of the offense. Yeah. But, that's going to be a little bit of a tough game. But what do you think of that one?
Yeah, second night of a back-to-back on the road in OKC. I'm gonna call it an L.
Mm-hmm.
The Raptors are good enough to, like, legitimately get a win out of any situation. So I don't think it's like a chalk it up to an L kind of thing.
That's true. Yeah, I agree. The Raptors, I mean, the road record could stand to improve a little bit, like 11-7, but I mean, they've also played a lot of tough games.
Yeah.
After playing in Dallas and in OKC, they'll only have one more Western Conference road game left.
It's Minnesota, right?
And it's Minnesota, and they played on January 20th. Yeah. So from then on, the Raptors are just going to be in the East.
The last 3 months of the season, basically.
That's nuts. I've never seen a schedule like that. So we're not going out West for the rest of the year. Wow. I think in that game, it just depends on what we do against Russ, right? Like, if we have, like, a good performance against Russ, which it's like, you know, it happens, right? Like, we have a point guard that's going to go at Russ and Kyle. And Kyle Lowry's had a lot of good games against Westbrook. Like, if he's able to, you know, play that to an even, then that's a win for me, at least. But, I mean, second half of back-to-back, it is tough, too. And then the Raptors finish the week playing on Friday. Raptors take on the Atlanta Hawks at home. I'll be going to this game. Hopefully, my cousin Ava decides that, you know, the Raptors are better than the Celtics. Kyle Lowry. Hopefully Kyle Lowry drops like 50 points, all right?
To convince her to switch allegiances.
Which is crazy. She's from like Palo Alto and stuff, so think she's a Warriors fan, but she's like, no, I'd rather just cheer for Kyrie.
One of those people, eh?
Yeah. I mean, if we're keeping it real, though, Kyrie's game is...
I mean, it's fun to watch.
It's beautiful.
It's fun.
It's a beautiful game.
It's very fun to watch.
He's just a flat earth truther, and, you know, the Raptors dominate him, kind of. Not really.
Except in the playoffs,
but yeah, whatever. Right, respect Kyrie.
Two in one week, I guess, is...
That's an easy win. How many... Are we winning that game by 30 or 40?
The Hawks game?
Yeah. 20, 30, or 40? I would say 30.
Yeah, like 28.
28. There you go. 28.
They'll have a 40-point lead. Although, man, it's hard to destroy a team two times in a row.
Well, I mean, what happened last time we played them, right?
They beat them by almost 40, I believe. They were up like
112 to 78.
There you go.
Jesus. What happened in that game? 78 points in the modern NBA with three-point shooting? Like,
you're talking about a top five defense here, Will.
That's true, man. I mean, top five offense and defense.
That's something I'd actually want to go back and check. You know, you always, every year, like, everyone's always looking at the two or three teams, maybe four max, that are top 10 on both ends of the ball.
Yeah.
I kind of mini project. I want to go and take a look at teams that have finished top five on both ends, because I feel like that'll narrow it down to, like, one a year. Maybe some years where, like, no one is.
Well, I mean, Golden State has been that way
for the last two or three. But that's what I'm saying, right? Yeah. You're talking about, like, the absolute elite, like, 60-plus win championship contenders.
And if you look at it, man, I mean, like, Raptors, effective field goal percentage, right? So that's taking out free throws, right? Like, 54.4, which is fifth in the league. Like, the Raptors are no longer even relying on free throws.
No.
Which is
no.
crazy.
And they're still getting to the line. Like, DeMar can still get to the line, obviously.
Of course.
But yeah, they're not relying on free throws as much anymore because their shot profile has improved.
Mm-hmm. Top 10 in turnovers, like fewest turnovers, which is also impressive because they're 10th in pace. So again, that's the Raptors changing their game. And, obviously, the three-point percentage could come up a little bit, but they're around league average there. They're 20th, but that's pretty
close. The rebounding has improved, too. They were, I think, like 3 weeks ago I had checked, and they were bottom 10 in rebounding, like defensively and offensively. Yeah. I think now offensive rebounding, they're almost in the top 10, and defensive rebound rate, they're like middle of the pack, which is fine.
Which is fine. I mean, like, look, Ibaka stepping up his rebounding has been help, has been huge. Also, Lowry's been getting triple-doubles and stuff. But, everything's good, man.
Yeah. It's funny, you know, like, you look at those numbers, and if you kind of, like, if you think about it, again, it's hard when you're a fan of a team to kind of, like, see the forest from the trees, right? So, like, you only see it as your team, and it's almost, like, weird to think about, like, are the Raptors, like, obviously, okay, they're not going to beat a team like Golden State in a playoff series, so they're not a true, true contender.
Yeah.
But in general, like, if you just look at their statistical profile and a lot of the advanced metrics, and if, you know, if no one told you who it was, if they just said, hey, there's an NBA team, here's their record, they're top five on both ends of the floor, here's how they're getting their points, here's their shot profile, like, two all-star, and if someone told you all of that, you'd say, oh, that's a contender.
I was
like,
gonna say,
hands down, that is a contender. That team could make, like, maybe get to the finals and, like, compete for a title. But when you're a fan of the team and you know and you've gone through the heartbreak and, you know, history, like,
you're more humble about it.
Exactly. Yeah. You're like, well, no, we know this isn't really a contender, but it's like, man, the profile kind of says they are.
Yeah. Like, if you just look at the stats, like, this looks like the Spurs to me, man.
Which is what I'm saying, right? And it's it's like hard to consider that when you're a team, like, a fan of the team, or if you're a hater that's just like, wow, this team chokes every year.
Yeah.
But if you take all biases out of it and just look at the facts, that the numbers are there, man.
They look good. They just got to get a couple more, like, marquee wins. Like, man, can you imagine if the Raptors beat Cleveland and Golden State back-to-back? Oh, boy.
If the Raptors beat Cleveland and Golden State that week.
That would be insane.
And, you know, like, right now, the other thing no one's really talking about, not only are they, you know, closing in on that East lead, they're two games out of the number one overall seed in the NBA. I don't, okay, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves because they could very easily go 0-2 with like a couple bad losses that week. But if the Raptors actually do beat both those teams that week, you would have to imagine they'd be hovering around the one, like, number one overall in the NBA around then, with two signature wins, like, probably on a 60-win pace. I feel like at that point, you might start hearing the DeMar MVP buzz from, like, media. Not that he would actually win it, but you'll start getting those, like, think pieces. You know, guys on ESPN will start writing about, like, oh, is DeMar DeRozan an MVP candidate?
That'll be like the Isaiah Thomas MVP candidate.
Exactly,
last year.
Yeah.
It's just like, we got to pick somebody.
Exactly.
But, yeah, man. You know what I want to hear at the very least? Some Dwayne Casey Coach of the Year buzz.
Because absolutely, he should be in the mix.
If you look at if you look at how much he's changed in terms of his the style of play, and also like the supporting cast, and how much he's gotten his own stars to change,
and how he's developed young talent while winning.
While winning,
that's like, that's a front office thing, but that's also a coaching thing. Like young players develop under Dwayne Casey. It's proof, and not only do young players develop, it says something about Dwayne Casey and the Raptors organization and their player development as a whole that. It's not just young guys that, you know, get drafted here and are brought into culture and develop. Like, look at Serge Ibaka's game. Seriously, look at Serge Ibaka's game right now. He's doing things that he legitimately either could not do or at least showed no signs of doing for the first, like, however long he's been in the NBA, 8-9 years of his career. He's now doing things, and Dwayne Casey talked about it on that great podcast with Zach Lowe, where, like, they're working with Serge on, like, quarterback in the offense from the high post, you know, and like being that trailing big man coming down. Things that he's never done in his career that the Raptors are now developing him in year whatever it is of his career. Like, again, the player development here has really become something to watch.
Shout out to your boy, Rex.
Rex Kalanian, boy.
a legend. All right. Anyway, Cash, thank you for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
Follow Cash on Twitter at... Is it Joseph Cassaro?
Yeah, it's Joseph Cassaro.
The whole name. The whole name.
The whole name.
Yeah. There's no Joey underscore W situation here.
No.
That one's tough, man. You got to change that. He's got to change that.
I had, like, when I first had Twitter, I think I was 19 when I started my Twitter. And it was, like, at Joey Cash. And then I think I, like, finished school and I was like, all right, I should probably make this.
I was going to say, that's what I remember. I remember it was.
Yeah. That, it was like that, in, like, my early 20s. And then I was like, I should probably make the at least the actual handle and, like, profile a little more professional.
Yeah.
So it's Joseph Cassaro.
And that's C-A-S-C-I-A-R-O.
Correct.
Yeah, there you go. Not C-A-S-S.
No.
Shouts to Walter. All right. Well, we'll be back on the other side with Twitter questions.
I'm Brian Goldfinger of Goldfinger Injury Lawyers, and you know what makes me mad? When insurance companies deny your claim for no good reason. That's why people call me. I'm the lawyer insurance companies don't want to deal with. Visit goldfingerlaw.com and get us working for you. Get Goldfinger
today. Welcome back to the second half of the show. Just me, Will, taking your Twitter questions. Thanks to Cash for joining me on the first segment. And second segment, we're just taking Twitter questions as usual. First one comes from at RapsFan1237. Shout out to Halifax. I got a Norman Powell signed ball for Christmas and an OG jersey. What's the best Raptors Christmas gift you've ever gotten? I haven't really gotten that many Raptors Christmas gifts. I think part of that is because I sort of specifically asked to not get Raptors stuff. Like, I would like to choose my own Raptors stuff. I don't know. I mean, just recently I gave the gift of giving some Raptors tickets. I think it's, you know, that's probably the best gift, really. If you give me some Raptors tickets, that's probably the best gift you can give a Raptors fan, because, you know, the other stuff is whatever. But an OG jersey, that's real. I want to see how many people are actually wearing OG jerseys. I want to see one around the city, because so far, not so much. I guess it's wintertime, it's hard to see people wear jerseys, but no, those are cool gifts, though. Those are cool gifts. All right, next one from Mark R. How happy are you to have DeLon back to anchor the bench, and why hasn't Casey pulled Pascal's green light on threes yet? Let's start backwards. I mean, look, Pascal's green light on threes, I don't think it's necessarily so bad. It's not like it's killing them with him taking those threes. Obviously, he hasn't made any in the month, and it's very concerning, and he's shooting, like, what, 13% now? But I think, look, it's obviously aspirational. Like, the Raptors would like all their players to shoot three-pointers, even their centers. Obviously, the main function of the centers is to offensive rebound and finish stuff around the basket. But, you know, we've seen JV, we've seen Poeltl step out very occasionally. And, you know, in the case of Pascal, like, he's going to have to hit that three eventually. And right now, if the offense is going the way it is, which is the offense has been working great of late, let him take those threes. It's not such a bad thing. I don't think it's like something that's killing them, right? It's a different matter altogether if, like, the Raptors are struggling and Pascal's shooting up all these threes. Like, that's a scenario where you got to pass up some of those shots because possessions are more valuable. But in the meantime, I don't really mind it that much. Obviously, he's got to hit the three, and obviously he has to work on the mechanics a little bit. But I'm sure if he's taking that many threes in a game, he's working on them, and it's just something that he's got to work through. Because if he could hit that three, like, that would change a lot for the bench units, because right now, you know, not a lot of shooting. They're running the high pick and roll or, like, the dribble handoff, wheeze, and stuff like that on top of the floor. And, you know, a lot of defenders are sagging off Pascal, and that's not great because it's limiting the penetration that guys like Fred VanVleet can get. But ultimately, just work through these things, man. It's December. You can try some stuff in December. And then as for DeLon back to anchor the bench, I mean we've seen that. The effect has been incredible. Like, just in these two last Sixers games alone, you just see the type of impact that, you know, DeLon can have. The switchability defensively is just something that the bench really does need. Like, DeLon is an excellent defensive point guard, and, you know, when he comes in there and he's able to guard guys like Ben Simmons even, it really does help the bench, because, like, otherwise, who are you really putting on the guys out there? Like, Norm is okay at defense, and then VanVleet is a way better help defender than he is actually on ball, and DeLon is able to combine the two of those. DeLon is able to take on the best defensive assignment out there that needs to be, you know, handled. And in terms of the way he plays offense, I mean, him getting to the basket is a big part of the bench unit. Like, you know, there wasn't a lot of smart point guard play. Not there wasn't a lot of smart point guard play, but like, when it was Norman VanVleet out there, like, they struggled to consistently get good shots. And it's not like DeLon is someone who consistently gets you good shots either, but he's someone that can at least finish at the rim. His disruptions help, you know, fuel transition offense opportunities and stuff like that. And he's more disruptive than either Norm or VanVleet on defense. And, you know, he's also a great passer too. Like, DeLon Wright is a very creative passer. We haven't really seen that as much since his return, but I don't know. At least defensively, DeLon has been great. And he's also contributing a little bit on offense just by scoring around the basket and stuff. So it's been great having DeLon back. He's, you know, it's weird, though, because even with him back, he's, like, what, the second-best bench player? Like, Poeltl's definitely the best one. But after that, I mean, with Pascal shooting the way he is, you probably got to give it to DeLon. And DeLon was a huge reason. I mean, without DeLon, the Raptors are not coming back in Philadelphia. They're losing that game. But DeLon came in and sparked a 20-2 run. And, you know, there's a DeLon high for a reason. All right? He's really fun to watch. Just hopefully that shoulder can stay healthy, because, you know, every time I see him make a hustle play, and every time in the back of my mind, I'm like, oh, God, you know, like, please let the shoulder be okay. Yeah. Next one from Tank Nation Raptors. Who drops out of the rotation when Miles comes back? Will be tough to run an 11-man rotation. Raptors have been balling ever since the rotation went down to 10. Shout out to Raps GM, Real GM, GOAT form. I mean, Real GM is, I don't know, I think Real GM is hit or miss, but I mean, there's some quality posts on there too. So it's better than Raptors Reddit, I'll say that much. Raptors Reddit is too positive. You know, Real GM might be a little bit negative, but whatever. I think it's a little bit closer to reality there. But in terms of who's dropping out of the rotation, I don't think anyone's dropping out of the rotation, man. It's just Dwayne Casey just wants to play all these guys, and they've all played well. I mean, you extending the rotation has helped limit minutes for DeRozan and Lowry. And I think with a shooter like Miles, like, the easy thing with Miles is, like, he's definitely not dropping out of the rotation, right? Because, you know, he can play with the starters, he can play with the bench, and that's great. Like, he needs to play as much as possible, really, especially when his shot is on. If his shot is off, maybe not so much, but, you know, when his shot is on, he can play with any lineup because he's just a shooter that's just spacing the floor. And in terms of who's dropping on the lineup, like, I don't think so. Like, right now, the one rotation player that's playing the least, making the least impact is Norm, unfortunately. And Norm might continue to lose some minutes, but, like, how much more do you want to cut Norm's minutes? Like, he's kind of playing bare-bones minutes as it is. Like, he played, what, like, less than 20 in the last two games? And that's, like, are you really going to cut him out of the rotation entirely? That doesn't make any sense. So, it's fine. I think running the 11-man is fine. You just got to share it. You share those minutes. Like, Van Vliet could probably take a little bit of a haircut. DeRozan could take a tiny bit of a haircut. And Lowry could take a bit of a haircut. But it's not like the Raptors haven't run 11-man rotation this season. Like, it's consistently been a deep rotation despite some minor injuries. So, I don't think anything's changing too much when CJ Miles comes back. He's still going to be one of the two first subs off the bench. He's still going to feature prominently with the bench unit as a first option. And occasionally, he's going to play with the first unit. You know, if they want some more offense, you know, although OG hitting all these threes right now, he's, you know, definitively the better option right now, but I don't know how long that lasts. Next one from, man, how do you pronounce that? Let's just say King. All right. B King. Who's the Raptor that's most likely celebrating Festivus right now? I mean, who is airing out grievances with the Raptors? Probably JV. JV's. I mean, but, like, I think JV's been a great soldier in terms of, like, he's accepted his role, and, you know, he's been. I don't know, man. If I'm on the Raptors, I probably wouldn't complain too much. Probably Bebe's probably a little bit complaining, but, like, he's hurt, so there's nothing much to say there. But, you know, you look at it in terms of who is unhappy, like. I don't think anyone really has so many grievances to air out, you know? I'm sure Lowry always has some stuff to say about Dwayne Casey because Lowry's kind of a smartass and, you know, he loves to go at Dwayne. But that's kind of like a... Like, Dwayne's talked about that a lot of times. Like, it's just sort of a... that's how all relationships go, man. They just bicker. It's more like bickering than actual outright fighting between the two of them. So they probably have stuff to say to each other. Like, Kyle Lowry probably wants to run this and Dwayne has to run this, but... whatever, it's not a real issue. And then in terms of JV, like, I think he's accepted his role, right? He hasn't looked unhappy. I mean, he's really, like, the Indiana game when they lost, like, he looked really unhappy in that game, after the game and stuff like that. But, you know, aside from that, he's bounced back really well from that. He's had a lot of standout performances. He's played well. He's had a lot of good offensive performances, and even when he sits nowadays, it doesn't look that much out of place. Like, the process has worked pretty well, so he's accepted his role. Maybe Norm has something to say, but, like, what are you really going to say, Norm, right? Like, right now, you're not playing well, so, you know, not much is going away. But as for everyone else, like, you know, I've seen Raptors fans even show a lot of love to Dwayne Casey, which is kind of rare. Like, Dwayne is kind of like the guy that takes all the shit for this team. You know, when things don't go well, and right now, even he's getting a lot of credit. I mean, like, shit, in the first segment I said he should be in consideration for Coach of the Year, and I absolutely mean that. He's done a fantastic job with that. So, I don't know. There's not going to be a lot of Festivus going on right now. I guess I don't watch. Hans Wolf says, what's a better feeling? Scissors gliding smoothly through wrapping paper or watching DeMar throw up threes with the assumption they'll go in. Okay, so I don't think I'll ever reach that point with DeMar with threes. Like, of course, of late, he's been on fire, but it'll take me quite a while, like at least a full season until I'm like, all right, you know what? I'm comfortable with DeMar taking this three. Like, I'm okay with him taking corner shots, whatever. He's always been all right at those, but, you know, it's just, come on. With DeMar's reputation and DeMar's history, like, it's going to be tough to feel confident in those threes. So I'm definitely going to go with paper running or scissors running through paper. There's nothing worse than when you actually have to cut because it leaves those little frayed lines on that cheap-ass Dollarama wrapping paper, and it's it looks for a bad gifts and whatever. So, yeah, when you can glide, that's definitely the best feeling. It's definitely the best feeling. Plus, you get straighter lines. I mean... I also cannot wrap gifts at all. I'm terrible at arts and crafts. So, you know, if I make something that even looks presentable, that's already a win for me. Next one from those guys. Best non-trade. Kyle to New York or JV and pick for whoever they were thinking. What do you mean? What was JV and pick for whoever they were thinking? Like, I don't even know what that pick was. But... it's definitely Kyle not trading Kyle Lowry to New York, because without Kyle Lowry, none of this happens, right? The Raptors definitely tank in that scenario. I don't know if DeMar gets kept. Maybe DeMar gets kept, but who knows if DeMar develops into the type of player he is today. And then you have no Kyle and DeMar bromance. You gotta figure out how that affects him, you know, in terms of the leadership role and stuff like that, and the burden of creating offense. Like, man, if Kyle Lowry got traded to New York in 2014 or 2013... for like Tim Hardaway Jr. and like Iman Shumpert and a 2018 first round pick, that would have been the Raptors would have been dramatically different. We would have been tanking for Wiggins, man. But and you know, what's that team? Wiggins, Tim Hardaway Jr. and like, I'm sure Masai would have done something nice with that, but I don't think it would have been nicer than Kyle Lowry and what he's done for their franchise for the last 5 years. So that's definitely the best non-trade. And then whatever this JV and pick thing, I don't even know what that is. I don't think that was an actual trade. Next one from Darren Marr. How worried are we about the bench's recent slide? Should we move any away from the bench mobs and towards staggering the starters more with it? I think, look, Dwayne Casey is already moving that direction. Like, we're seeing less of the all-bench lineups. We're seeing DeRozan with the bench. We're seeing Kyle Lowry with the bench. We're seeing, like, Ibaka play with the bench. Like, so, you know, he is already mixing some time in to just help that second unit, which has been struggling. But I think most of the second unit's issues come from offense. Like, they're not playing... they're not getting efficient shots a lot of the times, and a lot of it has come down to Van Vliet is sort of... it's not like he's taking control of the offense, but the offense is being run through Van Vliet a little bit too much right now, and he's not necessarily a guy that can create an offense. Like, the bench right now works the best when everyone's in scramble mode, and, you know, you have the hide screen with DeLon and Poeltl, and they get something, they penetrate into the paint, they swing it around, and there's an open shot. That's when the best offense for the bench comes from, but they're not getting enough penetration with the bench. Van Vliet's running a lot of the offense as well, and also, like, Norm struggling... Pascal struggling to hit threes, like, all that sort of comes together, and it has been great. But I don't actually mind the all bench mobs. Like, the start of the second quarter and start of the fourth quarter are generally speaking when the team's opponents put in their weakest lineups. So it's like that's when you want your bench to go buy you some minutes. And, you know, we've seen the bench do well at the start of the year. I think they're being scouted out a little bit more, which is natural with all these young players. Like, they're going to look good at first, and then they get scattered out and have to adjust. Like, that's just the nature of the league. I think they'll figure it out, man. It's again, it's not a big problem right now. It really isn't. Like, with the starters playing the way they are, like, they can bail out the bench. It's not an issue. And the bench has bailed the starters, right? So, you know, Casey's already started making adjustments that way. But at the same time, I don't mind the all-bench unit. I really don't. Especially this in the lowest leverage of scenarios. Within a game, I don't mind the all bench unit, because we've seen it happen, and we've seen it work too. It's just, if their offense is really struggling, they have to make sure their defense is really locked down, and we know they can do that. Like, there's so much athleticism on that second unit. They communicate well, they help each other well. you know, I want to see them play lockdown defense first and then either see that spark their transition opportunities and stuff like that, or just, you know, just be a lockdown defensive unit, whatever. The offense is never going to be great. Even when they were outscoring teams earlier in the year, the offense wasn't great. It just kind of is what it is, but the bench unit is fine. It's fine. I think having CJ Miles back consistently is going to help too. Just having another guy who can spread the floor and someone who they can run the offense for. Because right now you can't really run the offense for anybody. No one's really that deadly of a scorer. Another one from Hans Wolf. What is your most disliked outlet? Which down talks the Raptors, and why is it the Ringer? The Ringer is... I don't even consistently read the Ringer. Like, I read Jarks, Jonathan Jarks. He's been great. Read him since his Blogspot days. He's been a really observant guy. I respect his analysis a lot. In terms of the other guys of the Ringer, like, it's hit or miss. Like, sometimes, like, all right, our network's funny. Or, like, Chase Serrano. I love Chase Serrano as a guy. But, you know, the rest of them, like, you know, it's sort of take it or leave it. Which is kind of... It's not even slander. Like, it's kind of like that with any other outlet, right? Like... there's some writers that are you read and other ones you just kind of like whatever, right? I don't think there's a universal bias by any sort of publication to say whatever about the Raptors. I think generally speaking, Americans don't or think of Canadians as, you know, second class citizens, so there's always sort of a down talk element that comes with it. And also I think a lot of outlets try to be funny or edgy and they end up you know, slandering teams. Which is, like, not specific to the Raptors, although it's pretty easy to slander the Raptors, right? Like, you look at the playoffs and stuff like that, it's easy to poke fun of that. You had to really show it to get there. I mean, like, whatever. It happens to every team. In terms of the Raptors getting down-talked, I mean, that's really their prerogative. I don't really care that much about the outside perception of the team. It doesn't. Like, if I care, like, if you are a smart and insightful and... you watch a lot of Raptors games, and then you have criticisms for the team, I'm completely fine with those because, like, I want to see what you're seeing, and I want to know, you know, how the Raptors can improve. But if you're just, you know, making jokes or whatever, then, like, I don't really take it seriously. Whatever, it's not a big deal. And I think that's where most analysis of the Raptors comes from. It's like no one's really watching that many Raptors games except for us. So, I don't know. I guess don't take it so seriously. It's kind of the best point of it, right? Like, because, like, look, and you act up, and then they'll say, like, oh, look, at Raptors fans are angry again. It's like, well, there's a reason for that. But, yeah, I mean, I guess The Ringer does it. Even Sports Illustrated, I think they're pretty fair to the Raptors. Like if you look at another guy I really respect is Rob Mahoney. Like, he's written about the Raptors. He's been very insightful, obviously, like Zach Lowe and people like that. But, I don't know, you just kind of got to... There are people who comment, and then there are people who analyze, and I guess there's people who do both. If you are angry at commentary, that's not at a good place. Because, like, who cares? That's just, like, someone's random-ass opinion. Like, this podcast is commentary. If you don't like my commentary on whatever, on Jonas or whoever, like, that's not a big deal. It doesn't really bother me. It shouldn't bother you that much. But, like, if it's analysis, if someone who takes it seriously and looks at it, and they have a flaw or whatever, then, like, that's something you should take more to heart in terms of what you think of your team and stuff like that. So, I don't know. It doesn't really bother me that much. And the last one from Aaron. Do the Raptors have a real shot at getting the first seed, or is it really just a pipe dream? I think it's tough. I think Cleveland is really deep this year, but I think we'll see with Cleveland what happens once the year turns, because they play a lot more nationally televised games, and the NBA really goes hard in terms of their premier games. They keep them towards the end of the year because they want to duck the NFL for the first couple months. And so Cleveland's going to be playing a lot more national TV games. They're going to be playing a lot of more marquee games, so their schedule's going to be more difficult. I want to see how Cleveland adjusts to that and also how they handle LeBron's rest and stuff like that. If they give him a week off, 2 weeks off, how many games they take down the stretch. I think last year they rested him like 8 games. So they're all going to be losses when they rest LeBron. So we'll see what happens with Cleveland there. And in terms of Boston, I mean, they're already coming down to earth a little bit. But they're also a very deep team. They're a very system-run team. They're a lot like the Raptors, I'm not going to lie. And, you know, they should still be good. So the Raptors have a real chance. I would say right now there's an even chance between the Raptors, Celtics, and Cavs as for who gets that first seed. And I think the Raptors might be the most motivated out of the three of them. to get it done. But of course, that's assuming that Lowry and DeRozan stay healthy and Ibaka. So far, those three have been healthy, minus, you know, Ibaka taking a game off here and there for knee soreness, aka rest. But I don't know. Raptors have a real chance, man. They have a real chance. Plus, we have the easiest schedule of the three of them the rest of the way. So, yeah, I'd say the chance is real. Anyway, thank you guys for listening to the podcast. I'm sorry there was no reaction podcast on the 23rd. It's my birthday, and I mean, whatever. I didn't really care too much about that game. I did watch it. If you want some thoughts on it, the Raptors played great defense. I like Casey's adjustment against Embiid, in terms of, you know, first half Embiid was cooking Jonas like right off the jump, but then Casey went to sort of setting a help defender, timing the dribble, something that I think Jack noted on the broadcast. DeLon and VanVleet were doing a good job of that. Holding Embiid to a quieter game is great. Ben Simmons had a great defensive game plan in the first one. They had a great defensive game plan in the second one. Saric, whatever, he hit some shots, but ultimately the Raptors played great defense. And then you know, DeMar hitting those threes at the end of the third quarter, really giving them a big run in terms of stars. DeMar number one, DeLon number two, and I don't know, man. Who else played well in that game? Those are the two guys that stood out to me, at least. I guess Serge. Yeah, Serge number three. Serge has been great, man. I love the way Serge is playing right now. It's the versatility he's showing is really shocked me, because he, you know, like Cash said in the first segment, he is. I didn't know he had this much in his game, and the Raptors keep adding more and more to his plate, and he keeps handling it well. So, yeah. DeRozan, DeLon, and Serge. Kind of like the first game. Anyway, thank you to you guys for listening. Happy holidays. And, you know, hopefully I'll find someone to cover for the next two Raptors Reaction podcasts. I don't think I'll be doing either of them, like the Mavs game and the back-to-back against OKC. I'm going to be away for both of those. I might still watch the game, but we'll see. But, yeah. Anyway, thanks to all of you guys for listening, and go Raptors.
New home ownership can be a real eye-opener, but it's the perfect time to look into Homeowner 101 from The Home Depot. Free live streaming workshops taught by expert associates, now at homedepot.com/workshops. You'll find indoor and outdoor workshops, even home systems workshops. Plus, you'll get the know-how you need to care for your biggest investment. Master the basics at Homeowner 101, only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Register now at homedepot.com/workshops.